Welcome to the Love Out Loud podcast. And if you're new to our tribe, on behalf of the entire global family, just so you know, we love you. You're a part of a collective of millions now in over 40 countries around the world devoted to revolutionizing our views on love, global leadership, challenging systems of fear, and creating a new earth together. Love Out Loud takes you on a journey of learning how to love yourself and realizing your unlimited potential so that together we can create a unified and compassionate world. Our membership is the heart of our ever-growing global family, and we would love to see you in there. Join us for free now by clicking the link below. Adam Roa, I am extremely excited for this conversation. I have a deep intention to want to bring and extract all of the depth of understanding you have around creativity, art, self-love, out of you to share with the LOL community all around the world, because it's such a valuable message. And I feel often self-love, as you know, is a conversation that has become cliche, that people have overlooked, and yet it really is, you know, the starting point to all the fruits of life. And one of the things I feel you and I really share in our message is helping people understand, at least this is what I hear in your poetry. Adam's an incredible, esteemed poet, performer, is releasing music soon, is all sorts of crazy talented artists. But one of the things I really hear in your message is that self-love is the starting point. It's not the end game. It's this place that when we arrive at, all of the possibilities start from there. And I'd love to just open the conversation from that point of view.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, Nicole. Thank you for having me on this, and to the whole LOL community. pleasure to meet your acquaintance. As far as self-love, what I've found is not only is it the starting point, it's the end point. I think that everything comes back to self-love. I believe that if you look at any issue that anyone is having, if you look at any issue that we are collectively facing, if you synthesize it down and you keep asking, like, why is that happening? Like, where was that coming from? And you just keep asking those questions. Eventually you'll find that it stems from a lack of self-love. There's some sort of disconnect between feeling seen, heard, loved, full, whole, complete, healed. There's something lacking there that has created a rotten foundation by which the system has been built upon, or the person has taken their action from. And so I believe that at its core, if we can get people to love themselves, then we will actually see a natural resolution of a lot of the issues we face today.
Isn't it crazy when you start to recognize this and then you look at whole systems that are impacting billions of people and promoting oppression and fear, and it really is coming back to these few individuals in those positions of power just lacking that self-love. Is that something that you would agree with, that, you know, the few people that hold so much power in the world, that the decisions they're making that are creating and perpetuating oppression and powerlessness collectively, that also comes back to a place of, or an absence of, self-love?
Yeah, I think that, you know, let's take a hypothetical example, but something that does happen, of someone who runs a, like, oil company that is making decisions that is like destroying this planet in a lot of ways. And we can look at that through the lens of, they just don't care about the planet. Sure, like, we could say that. That's an easy, I think that dehumanizing and vilifying people is a easy way to create a black and white dynamic of, like,
separating ourselves from,
yeah, that's a separation. But at the end of it, what I like to look at it is, well, that person is being motivated by something. What are they being motivated by? Probably money, and to some degree. Great. What does money mean to them? Okay, money means security. Okay, why do they need that security? Okay, because they're afraid of, if they don't have that security, that something bad will happen to their family. And I was like, okay, so they really love their family. Boom. We've already started through a series of just questioning. We've gotten to a place already where their love exists.
Yeah, they're making compassion extends.
Yeah, they love their family, and the fear of something bad happening to their family is where they're taking a scarcity aspect to decision making. But there is a love of family there, and we can keep going down and be like, okay, well, if they don't provide for their family and something bad happens, what are they going to do? What would happen? They would judge themselves. They would say that I wasn't a good father or a mother or whatever. Okay, I'm not a good father. What does that mean? That means that I'm associating my value as a father as being able to provide financially. Okay, great. And just you go down this place and you realize, oh, maybe I've just assigned my value as a human to what I can provide financially. Mm. Boom. Now we have this understanding. Is that actually your value? Is that actually how you want the metric of your worth as a soul to be on this planet? And if so, okay, then obviously that's how you're living it out. But if not, then
what else?
What else is there? Where can you love yourself more so that your value is not attached to the money? And so I just think that it can always come back to self-love.
Mm, I love that so much. One of the things I refer to so often is this idea that Darwin actually spoke about in a paper that was never published, that he wrote before Survival of the Fittest, and it was called The Theory of Artificial Barriers. And he was a botanist. Like, so many people don't fully understand the depth of his work. He studied nature. And one of the principles of this paper, ironically never published, even though Survival of the Fittest was that as human beings, we create these artificial barriers, but nature is only ever seeking more of itself. And so the process of evolution as a human being is this process of actually recognizing these barriers are artificial, they're not real, the things that keep us separate. And he said the premise was compassion is the greatest key to our evolution. Because compassion allows us to start to humanize people that we've kept ourselves separate from. So that's the journey to oneness, is being able to ask those questions. And what I've seen in my work is it's actually a very natural thing for us to do, is to humanize one another. So there's been this unnatural culture, these unnatural conditions, these artificial ways in which we've learned to think that have allowed us to dehumanize each other, to not ask those questions, to not see compassionately. And from your journey and your experience, why do you think that is?
Let me make sure I understand the question. Why do I think it is that we have created so many artificial aspects of separation?
Yeah.
That's a really good one. I mean, you come in with the heavy hitters right off the bat. I think that, for me, I think that the artificial areas of separation come, if we're going to bring it back to self-love, I think that, in every aspect of separation, most people, bring in the separation as a way of feeling better about themselves. Like, I'm a Republican, you're a Democrat. I'm a NRA member, you're anti-gun. Like, I'm this, you're that. And almost always the separation that's created is the thing I am is better. The thing I am is right. Right. And so this, again, is at the end of the day about self-love. This is about someone wanting to feel better about themselves. And they think that the way to do that is to create separation and elevate themselves through that separation. And one of the things I know that you believe, as well as myself and several of our friends, is a rising tide lifts all ships. And this idea, and something that I have said, I think it's in one of my poems, is I'm on a pedestal. Like, I put myself on a pedestal because I want you to see that you have your own too. Me having a pedestal doesn't mean you don't have one. That's the misconception of this separation, is like me being on a pedestal means that you don't have one. And so therefore you in Australia have tall poppy syndrome, where you have to tear me off my pedestal so we can all be down here, when I'm saying we can all be up here. And I think that, again, if we're just going to, there's a lot of other reasons for that separation, but I do think that a primary one, bringing it back full circle to the self-love, is that just trying to feel significant, like you said.
I think it's such a potent point of conversation and something that I'm just so immensely passionate about. And I completely agree with everything you're sharing. And yet, have you found through, you know, your artistry, your ability to connect with people, and when they're hearing you share this, these truths, you know, that you are worthy, that you are enough, that we aren't separate, and that resonates so deeply with people, have you seen, you know, any sort of insight into then why we've become so disconnected when innately we know the truth? Why we've then started to build our identities on these ideas of separation and significance?
Well, I think that one of the primary reasons is because it's ingrained into us through societal conditioning. You know, I think that if you look at it, and being from the United States, like every single thing that America is really based on is based on being better, like bigger, better, faster. Like we aren't, like the United States happened because we said fuck you to the British colonies, right? Like we're just like to Britain, we're like nope, out of here, done. So we like fought our way, and we're like, great. Now, then we feel like we're better in the sports, right? The Olympics, in terms of our cars, in terms of our GDP, in terms of our military, in terms of like whatever it is. Like America, it seems like is built upon this idea of being better, and we know better, and that manifests itself into like all of our advertising. And I grew up heavily into sports, and one of the sayings that I had was second place is the first loser.
My dad used to say that to me all the time.
Second place is the first loser. But like imagine what that says. It literally says if you are not the one winner, if you're not that one winner, you're the lumped in with just losers. That's what it is. And like it's kind of crazy to think about. And I posted a line of poetry to my Instagram just yesterday that said, getting your way is not the same thing as being right. Mm. And what's happening on the planet right now is, let me take you through this mind tether here.
Please.
which is
bring us in.
If you believe that getting your way is the same thing as being right, then it means that not getting your way is the same thing as being wrong. And the ego, its entire identity is built on not wanting to be wrong. Like that's what our egos do, is like defend our belief systems and all those things to say, okay, I'm right. Now, what happens is, take a look at what's happening on the planet right now around politics in particular. That's a great example. Racism and just all these different things. Basically, cancel culture. If my presidential candidate, whether it's Trump or whoever, doesn't win, like it's the end of the world. People are getting violent. They're getting angry. They're getting defensive. When you look at the cancel culture and a celebrity that someone feels like crossed the line, we need to like end their career. We will not accept their apologies. Like, but like all of these things that are happening. Oh, someone's disagreeing with me on social media. Let me block them. Let me whatever, and create this echo chamber. The reason why I'm sharing that is because the reason why people are becoming more and more almost like violently defensive of getting their way is because the idea, if they don't get it, it means they're wrong, which is a whole ego blow. And they need to be right. They need to be right, because the idea of being wrong is all the things that we just discussed. And it's a huge blow to the ego. And so many people on this planet, one, the climate has gotten to a point where people don't want to take anymore. Like they're just over it. Like they're done having their ego get hit. They're very sensitive right now. And two, so few people have been equipped with how to deal with something like that. So few people have been equipped with the tools and the practices and the communities to support them, like the Love Out Loud community, to support them in dealing with an ego death, or are struggling with their identity and their limiting beliefs and stuff. And so I do believe that's what we're seeing on the planet, and this absolute just like digging in our heels, not listening to other people's opinions, needing something to happen a certain way is because people believe that getting their way means they are right. If Trump wins, I was right about this country. If Trump, like all of that kind of stuff. And so I don't know if that answered your question, but that was a rabbit hole, wasn't it? So
no, I loved that rabbit hole. And you know, there's so much in that. I have like a million questions just from that one rabbit hole, but I really want to go deeper into the idea of defenses. Yeah. And how do we actually hold space for each other's defenses? Because I feel one thing that society's gotten better at talking about is vulnerability, but I almost feel in a way we've developed this kind of preconceived concept of what vulnerability looks like. Like unless you're sitting in circle, crying, holding hands, then you're not being vulnerable. Right. And one of the things I really like to bring people's awareness to is, you know, the most vulnerable people I know in my life are the people that are the most defensive, are the ones that are just so fragile on the inside, and they're holding on to those beliefs that you're talking about and that need to be right so strongly that they're triggered by everything and they're needing to defend everything about who they are. And I'd love you to just share on, you know, I know art has such a powerful way of being subjective and getting beneath people's egos, you know, because art's not about being wrong or right, it's about expression. And just your learnings from that, learnings about how that has allowed people maybe who have been in your audience, who have been really defensive or alpha or whatever it is, it's gotten in their way of accessing that vulnerability, and just what you've learned through that experience and that process.
Wow. There's so many layers to that. Yeah. Let me ask you this question back first. Like, how do you define vulnerability?
Vulnerability, I mean, by definition, is the risk of being wounded or having your wound exposed. And I connect with that as a definition of vulnerability. I think, you know, the reason you're so vulnerable when you fall in love, going back to our conversation that we were having before the start of this podcast, is because all of a sudden our wounds are exposed and we're not fully able, we're not completely in control of our ability to protect ourselves. And I think this is the interesting thing about defense, right? We're trying to keep that control, but the reality is those defenses have control over us. When you're falling in love, the person we're falling in love with has the ability to hurt us. It's not within our ability to control. So I think when you're in a position where you're not able to fully control, I think there's a degree of vulnerability in that.
Hmm. I love that. That's beautiful. And so to build upon that, then the vulnerability is something that it allows our wounds to be exposed. But I would change that, because how I view vulnerability is not even just about wounds. I think that vulnerability is allowing ourselves to be exposed.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think that by exposing more of ourselves, we expose the thing, because like when someone says something to us in response to a vulnerable share, when we expose part of our soul, for example, I'm releasing my first ever song on October 9th. And like, I've never thought that I would release music. It was never a thing for me. So it feels very vulnerable to step into that and be now like, people are going to tell me they like it. They're going to tell me they hate it. They're going to not listen to it. They're going to listen to like whatever. But the moment I do that, the response from someone who says, oh yeah, not really my type of music, that triggers the wound, right? But then on the other end, I expose myself to someone, I make myself vulnerable, and they say, I don't normally listen to that type of music, but I love that. Mm. All of a sudden, they could heal a potential wound that was there, or that compliment lands more deeply because I've opened myself up, right? And 100%. So it's kind of like, when you talk about some of the most vulnerable people are the most defensive, I would even say, like, if they're super defensive about anything that's coming their way, they're trying to, they're like playing a step later in the game. They're not actually being present to, I'm being vulnerable.
There's an opportunity.
what comes in and let's be with that. What comes in, they're actually like opening themselves up and then
trying to definitely going to go badly.
Yeah. They're like trying to block things before they happen out of fear of what's going to happen. And so, defensiveness, what this reminds me of is someone asked me one time before going on stage, I said, do you get nervous? Are you nervous? And I said, well, right now my stomach is got some butterflies. My hands are a little bit sweaty. And I was like, and I got this like nervous, what we call nervous energy, this energy in me. And I said, so that's what's physiologically like happening in my body here. What's the difference between being nervous and being excited? And you see, because physiologically it feels the same, but the difference is if I'm thinking about what can go wrong, I'm nervous. If I'm thinking about what could go right, I'm excited. Yeah. And so I think
rehearsing the best outcome.
Just like, what am I thinking about? I'm thinking like, oh my gosh, I'm going to go out there. This is going to be so fun. I'm going to touch people's hearts and lives and my poems. I'm going to like deliver them better than I ever have. And like holding those visions, I get really excited at the opportunity to step on stage and to deliver. And if I'm thinking about what if I forget a line, like what if I trigger some people with what I'm going to say, then I can be very nervous. And similarly with defensiveness, like we can all be vulnerable. And then in that vulnerability, we get defensive if we're worried that someone's going to hurt us in that vulnerability. Mm. And yet if we're like me, like one of our friends, Jared Grantham, which I imagine some of your audience is familiar with, says to me all the time, he's like, you're one of the most like raw, vulnerable, authentic people I know, like in terms of your YouTube show, The Art of Choosing Love and various things. He's like, I don't know people who go to that level of vulnerability that you do. And for me, there's a couple aspects to it, Nicole, that I think are really important. One, it's for me. In large part, it is for me because one of my biggest wounds karmically is I've not felt safe on the planet as the victim of sexual abuse when I was 5 to being hit with belts and wood things by my father as discipline to like all these various things. I did not feel safe on the planet. And so part of this is me basically saying, I'm going to show all of me like with no shame at all. I'm just like, this is me as real as I can be to prove to myself I can do that and still be here. I can be safe. I'm not going to die. I'm not going to like, part of that is my own healing process around one of my deepest wounds. The second aspect to that is that the more vulnerable I am, the more connection I create. And this, I've seen this because at our core, some of our deepest core fears, the fear of abandonment, the fear of not being enough, the fear of the absence of God, the fear, these like fundamental fears that most things can be traced back to are something that we all share. We all share that. And so our deepest vulnerabilities are actually where we can connect. It's that common ground at the root of who we are amongst all of us. We have some common desires like love and connection that I think connect all of us. And we have some common fears that all other fears stem from. And so in the vulnerability, we find connection. And the more deeply vulnerable we are, the more of ourself we expose, which is actually more of ourself that can be connected to another human being.
Mm, I love that so much. It reminds me, well, what it brings me back to is so many of us, all of us, want to be loved for who we are in our entirety. And yet, unless we're willing to put all of ourselves on the table, we actually can't be loved for all that we are because we're not offering ourselves fully. It's just a beautiful reminder, you know, so often we're waiting for the evidence. Like I want to see the evidence as to, you know, how and why I'm lovable in my entirety before I put it on the table. And isn't that just so, you know, it's so telling of how we can be as humans. We need to see it in order to believe it. And we forget that believing is seeing. And by giving, we open ourselves to receiving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I've explored that concept a lot in my own life financially and various other ways. I remember when I was in a deep process around money for many, many months, several years ago, and like, how do I call in more abundance? Like, why does it seem like I'm stagnated at this thing? And I finally said, okay, I believe that giving and receiving are the same. Like, I believe they're the same thing. So why, if I don't know how to receive more right now, let me test this by giving more. And so I went the other direction and I started giving and giving and opening myself up in that way. And it's not a coincidence that within 3 months I was receiving far more. And I think that one of
everybody take notes on this exact.
So many people, it's funny because I actually did this. So my podcast is called The Deep Dive, and this was probably like 2 years ago. So you'd have to go back through the library, but there's a bunch of episodes around money when I was experimenting with this very concept. I was sharing it out on my podcast at the time. And so for anyone who's interested, understand that this goes counterintuitive to what most people do.
Most people we've been taught.
Yeah, most people feel like, I need more to receive more money, and they constrict around their giving, and they tighten up around their energetics because they're afraid that they need to call in more and they can't let any out. And what happens is that constriction in general is going to constrict your receiving and your giving, because you're a vessel. It's not like it just goes out and doesn't come in. Like, you are a vessel, and when it leaves, it creates a vacuum that something has to come to occupy that space energetically. And so, giving and receiving being the same thing is a big part of me. I'm glad that you resonate with that.
I'm just so passionate about it. You know, it's because I want people to have a lived experience of this. Like, don't let this wisdom be theoretical. If you believe that you don't have enough money to buy whatever it is you want to buy, just experiment, go out and actually be generous with a loved one or with a friend, and just notice how you feel in your body after you do that, and how much more expansive you are energetically. And that is the ultimate state of abundance, where you're actually available to receiving that back. And if you can start to be aware that in that process of giving, just like the process of self-love, like a question I get asked all the time is, oh, you talk about self-love, Nicole, but where's the line between loving yourself and, you know, and loving others? And I just find that such an interesting question, because I don't see it as separate. Loving myself is loving others, and loving others is loving me. And I feel like giving and receiving, when they're coming from that purity of intention, it's one and the same. It's not actually separate.
And what can you expand on? I would love to hear your philosophy around how loving yourself is loving others. Because I think that's that philosophy, I agree with it. And yet one of the most common things is like, isn't self-love selfish? Like, shouldn't we start by loving others?
We could do a whole season on this. Adam. We should do a season of our exploration of how and why self-love is not selfish or narcissistic or sociopathic or whatever other crazy, crazy beliefs people have developed around that. And it's, you know, love is naturally, it's reciprocal. As the greatest metaphor I can give is breathing. You know, like, if you breathe in and you breathe in and you breathe in and you breathe in and you don't breathe out and you just keep breathing in, it's going to get to a point where it feels unnatural and it feels painful. And the same thing's going to happen if you keep breathing out and you don't breathe in. And I see, like, the energy of love and the process of giving and receiving is exactly the same. We're meant to give and receive equally. We're meant to be in this process of non-separation when it comes to loving you and loving me. I think where people get stuck is they think they're loving someone else, but where it's actually coming from is maybe a need to be needed, or a need to be, it's coming from a need. And love is so naturally whole. There's not a need in that. It's you're loving because there's a natural overflow. And that will always be two-way.
Yeah. And something that's really important to me to speak to is love is unconditional. Relationships are not.
Yes.
And so I want people to make sure that you really understand that when we're talking about love in this way and in the giving of this love, it does not come with any practical boundaries or logistics around the relationship aspect. It doesn't mean any of that. I love each and every one of you. Every single one of you listening to this podcast, I guarantee you, like if I saw you even now, like I hold love in my heart, take me for my word or not, but like I love you because you are. And I recognize that it can be very hard to be human, and you signed up for this journey, and I'm so grateful to your soul for being here on this planet today. I'm so grateful for you being a part of the Love Out Loud community and taking the time out of your day to listen to this. Like, I love you as a human, and most of you are probably not people I want to date. And or probably not people that we're going to be like epic.
Just FYI, friends. Everybody.
Or it is that kind of thing, because there are conditions to relationship that are not selfish. They're not wrong. They don't make you anything. They are something that you get to own, and that is very important to speak to, because I feel like so many of the very type of people in your community have this belief that they need to show up in a certain way in every relationship and just turn the other cheek and like all of these things about what it means to really love others that is misconstrued. When we're speaking about love, let's talk about the unconditional love we have for each other as human beings, as spiritual souls on this journey together. And let's talk about how love translates into relationships where you get to create conditions and boundaries that are loving of yourself and honoring of the other people in your life.
Yes, such a good conversation. Oh my goodness. Would in your frame, is there a difference between honoring someone and loving someone?
It's a good question. Is there a difference between honoring someone and loving someone? I think that it's all going to be perspective, meaning what I consider to be loving someone, they might see as me not loving them. Right? And what I consider to be, like if I break up with someone, let's say I break up with someone, let's use a real example. My last relationship ended because I was in a very deep depression at the time. And I was really struggling. And I just got to a point where I felt like I could not navigate someone else's experience or emotions or anything any longer. I was struggling just to keep my own head above water. And I needed to just focus entirely on me and not feel any responsibility to anyone else. That was what I felt was like an honoring thing and a loving thing to do. It's like, I can't show up in this relationship the way that she wants me to, or the way that I want to in any relationship that I'm in. Therefore, the loving choice and the honoring of her choice is to end this relationship. Did she want me to do that? No, absolutely not. But to this day, I believe that was the most loving choice for her, for me, and for us. And so, that's a tangible example of where I feel like the loving choice and the honoring choice is going to be relative. And that's why it's so important, I think, to get such a strong foundation of our own self-love so that we can actually lean into our integrity around, I am making the loving choice. If you are at a place where you doubt your own integrity to show up in love, as love, and by love, and through as love moving through you, if you question your own ability to show up in that way, that is where I would recommend people start. Like, I would recommend people be really looking at, do I believe that my actions stem from love in every moment? Am I choosing love consciously every choice that I get? Because the truth is, for a big part of my life, I didn't. There were a lot of decisions I made when I was younger where I was like, I could see where that was fear. I could see where that was arrogance. I could see where that was me trying to get ahead, like all of these things. And I've gotten to a place where I can confidently say, I believe that I make every choice from a space of love. I ask the question, what is the most loving choice to do here? And I start that with, what's the most loving choice for me? Like, what is honoring of me and loving of me? Okay, great. Now, where can I extend that outward? Where can I extend that? Because every time we make a decision, and we may think that it's loving someone else, but it's out of integrity for ourselves, we've just damaged our relationship with ourselves. We've damaged our own self-trust, which takes a while to rebuild back. And how we show up in the world, if we're someone who doesn't trust ourselves or feel in integrity with our own word or the ability to show up for ourselves, how we show up in the rest of the world is not actually our highest. It is not the most beneficial thing for the planet. So in that moment, you might think that choice is better, but if you go out of integrity with yourself, you are creating a dynamic and a frequency within your own being that will have a net negative in the average that is this cumulative collective consciousness game that we're playing. So I never advise people to do that.
So potent what you're sharing. Just thank you for sharing this. It's so great. I mean, that's an understatement, but I'm just resonating so deeply. I'm like, this is good. It's great information. What I really want to say is this is fucking magnificent. Everyone take notes. This is so important for people to actually hear and to receive. And have you found in living your life this way over time and with practice and with the congruence to your own integrity, it has inevitably created less conflict in your world and in your life, the more that you've honored yourself in those ways?
No.
Okay, let's talk about that.
I don't know that I could honestly say that's the case, because I also believe that the stronger a stance you take in any way, even if it's for love, the stronger a stance you take, the stronger the polarity that gets created with a lot of people.
I think Einstein said, great minds will always have violent opposition.
Yeah, that's a great quote. I'm not familiar with that one. That's beautiful. Yeah, I think that, like, for me, it's like if everyone thinks your stuff is good, it's probably not great. Like that's like the place that I took with my poetry and different things, is because if everyone's like, yeah, he's cool, like I like it, like, there's nothing really to complain about, you're probably not taking a very strong stance. You're taking this space here where it's like, it's lukewarm water for everyone. Like, no one's going to complain. It's too hot.
It's nice.
Too cold. Yeah, it's nice. But like, there's nothing for them to push against. You're bending. You're this bamboo. You're just bending. But like, when you become the oak tree, there's something for people to push against. There's something for people to try and cut down.
Get clear on their own position as well.
Yeah, you are holding a strong frequency, and that is going to trigger people who are not in alignment with that frequency. What's important for me is to stay humble in the fact that I don't think I'm right. I don't actually think there is a right. I don't actually think that my way is more spiritually enlightened or more whatever. I think that the way that I speak about living, the advice that I give around it, the coaching that I offer, all of that is the result of a synthesis of information and a way of living, and everything from plant medicine ceremonies to reading books to having mentors to lived experience, that I feel like is the most effective way of creating a world that I would like to see. And that world involves more compassion. That world involves something where people feel seen, heard, and loved. That world involves getting rid of racism and getting rid of money-driven politics. And like, that's the world that I would like to see. If you align with that vision, if that feels like the type of world that you want, then trust me in saying that how I'm speaking about how to get there comes from a ton of energetic investment on my part in exploring what that could take. And when I speak it, take what resonates and leave the rest, but take it with an open mind, hopefully, and then synthesize what I'm saying in combination with what you learn from people like Nicole Gibson, who's also dedicated her life to that exploration. And, you know, take that in and synthesize it and really sit with what's most effective to create the world I want to live in. And the stronger a stance you take for any type of world or any type of lifestyle, anyone who doesn't align with that is, it's going to trigger them. And the truth is that there are some people on this planet who feel like everyone owning guns and women not being able to vote and Black people still being in slavery and like all of that stuff. There are people on this planet who feel like that would be the best way to live. My message is going to trigger the hell out of them. That's just the truth. It's going to trigger the hell out of them. That's great. We can disagree. I'm going to continue to work towards mine and you can continue to work towards yours. And as long as you're not causing harm to people.
Well, I mean,
it'll be tough with all the beliefs that I just said.
Yeah.
But like in general, like if you're a vegan and I'm not a vegan, or if you believe in a certain type of meditation and I don't, or if you are vehemently opposed to plant medicines and I'm a supporter of them, like there's so many ways in which we could still coexist that are still working towards a more loving world that don't cause harm to people.
Yes. Now I love that the bigness of what you're sharing, and it's something that I'm really passionate about. In fact, I'm creating at the moment a summit called the Global Unity Summit. I'd love you actually to come and speak at that summit. And the intention is, it's being held a week after the US election. The intention is to bring leaders into a container that do have conflicting views, that would otherwise not be seen in the same room as each other, with an intention not to agree, but to actually coexist and to find a place of coexistence and unity in potentially an absence of resolution. And yeah, through all of my contemplations and explorations, that is one of the keys. We need to learn how to be with others that don't share our frame, that don't share our worldview, and to not try and tear their experience down or discredit the way they see the world in an attempt to make ours more valid, but to be secure enough, you know, to have enough self-love, to not feel threatened by that opposition, to not even see it as opposition.
And getting back to that, the point I made earlier, which is getting your way is not the same thing as being right. And understanding that, like, whether it goes the way you want it to in politics or education or whatever, it doesn't, you might have gotten your way. That doesn't mean that you were right. And you may not get your way, and it doesn't mean that you were wrong. It's just an understanding that, like, I have so many, how boring this world would be if we all agreed on everything. The only
unless issue, they all agreed with me, or unless they all agreed with you, that would be a great world.
Totally. If you just agreed with everything I said, the world would be great. But even like, I love, you know, Nicole, you know this, we've had conversations even just like, of like, I love you having viewpoints that I don't have. I love that because I feel like that's how I expand. Like if we agreed on everything, we're literally in an echo chamber. We don't grow. 100%. We don't
grow. You need the edge. You need the edge to push against.
And so I love that. The where we've gotten a bit misguided as a human race, I think, is in the we've seemed to have lost the ability to have compassionate conversation. It's like from the very beginning, if you're on one side of an argument and I'm on the other side and we believe different things, somehow we're enemies. Mm-hmm. And if instead we were looking at that, like we're actually on the same team. And this conversation is just for us to continue to refine how we live together in the most harmonious way. On
expand
this,
ourselves.
Right? On this one spaceship that we're sharing that has no roof as we hurl through the galaxy. Come on. Like we are sharing this place and we are coexisting. We're roommates. And so let's just have compassionate conversation. And I think compassionate conversation, to me, again, let's bring this back to self-love. I believe that compassion.
That's full circle.
Totally. I'm bringing back.
Yeah. I've thank you. Before.
I feel like the interesting thing is that to me, compassion is the external expression of self-love. I believe that self-love expressed is compassion. And the reason I believe that is because the when we've learned to love those aspects of ourself, when we've learned to love the aspects of ourself that get righteous or angry or judgmental, when we can love those, when they show up in other people in our space, we can have compassion because we realize what it took to love that within ourselves.
Yes. So good. 100%. And that really is, you know, that's the marker of someone that has, I guess, reached that place in their own journey, their ability to be with all that is, because they see themselves in that. They've reconciled those aspects of themselves. There's no fight. There's no war going on in the inside anymore. And it extends our capacity to be with others, even those that, you know, are different or who seem different to us. We still have the sameness that is present. And how amazing when you start to see those edges as an opportunity to just love yourself more. Wow, this person's bringing this stuff up in me. There's an edge that I'm meeting. I'm finding it difficult to hold a space of compassion for these individuals. That's showing me where I can deepen my own capacity to love myself.
Who's the hardest, like, what's the hardest group of people for you, or the hardest type of person for you to have compassion for? Where do you struggle the most?
Great question. Now, honestly, the greatest gift in my work has been sitting and hearing so many people at the very beginning of my work as well, in such a diversity of places and races and ages and locations, that after hearing, you know, 5,000 people's stories, 10,000, 50,000, 500,000 people's stories, you just start to hear the same story. You start to just see the humanity. And that's, I'm so anchored to that even if there's a trigger, like if I see someone being violent or I see someone being racist or homophobic or ignorant, my exposure to humanity, it very quickly brings me back to, like, I am you, you are me. And that awareness, you know, that belief is so anchored in my consciousness that I tend to generally always come back to that place. But I mean, I was 19 years old working as a commissioner for the Commonwealth and advising the Prime Minister and the Health Minister, and I was in a male-dominated environment. I was the youngest commissioner in history. I'd walk into boardrooms in Parliament House, teenager, you know, female, with these men who thought they had the capacity to make compassionate choices for people that were in my position only a couple of years prior. And I was perpetually dismissed, you know, and I think that was the biggest training ground, because my approach in that environment was to never fight and to never try and discredit them. It was to actually hold space and hold space for them and their pain. And I think that compassion grew because, and I'm sure you can relate to this, Adam, the level of self-hatred and self-rejection that I had to journey, I think, has given me my superpower, which is the ability to be with others in theirs. And I saw them just like I see people now who are demonstrating those, you know, ways of being. All I can see and feel is myself when I was in the grips of that prison of self-hatred and not able to see beyond myself.
Thank you for sharing that. First of all, I can relate so deeply to it. It's funny, whenever we're ending this thing, I have a poem that is so relevant to everything we've been talking about that I'd love to end with. It's called "Why Don't More People Believe in Love?"
Yes. You know, it was so funny. I was going to ask you to recite a poem at the end of this. And then there was a flow that you got into before, and it was almost like prayer. And then I had the thought, how cool would it be for us to pray together at the end of this podcast and send a prayer out to, you know, humanity during this time? So I'd love to do both if you're open to that.
Let's do both. So okay. Why don't I do a poem?
Yeah.
And then you can lead the prayer.
Okay. But then I also want you to add on to the prayer. I want it to be like a unified prayer.
Okay. Well, then if you want to make your prayer rhyme, it'll be like one continuous poem.
I'll do my best.
Cool. All right. Well, this poem is called Believe in Love. And I don't need to even intro it. This is, everyone will understand. If you're listening to this right now, please take a nice deep inhale and exhale. Why don't more people believe in love? Above all else, this is the question I have felt stirring deep in my heart. Why don't more people believe in love? Because if a person knew love was real, why would they choose to feel anything else? I guess I get to ask myself that very same question. The lessons of love repeat themselves, and yet I keep testing my own beliefs that I've held on to for so long. The songs tell us the history of love. The movies show us the mystery of love. The art on this planet has granted us access to a collective heart we've been handed, but instead of handling it with care, we have filled it with despair, and there have been so many unanswered cries for help, it feels safer not to care. Collectively, we have turned our backs on the meek, taken advantage of the weak, and told the timid not to speak. But love can't be silenced. So through the generations of violence, there's been a message so timeless that beats deep inside us, and with each beat reminds us that love is still here. Loud and clear, that message rings out, love is still here. It is near to each of us, and if we look through our fear, it reaches us. So why are so many people still afraid? The way they behave can't be love, can it? I try to understand it, but damn it, it hurts to see us pillage this planet endlessly, torture animals senselessly, kill people for the color skin we see, fueling bigotry while poverty leaves children homeless on the sidewalks. We ignore them so we cannot see their hungry eyes, watch us eat ourselves into obesity. Yet in it all, I see the love. We bought the thing to feel worthy of the thing we bought. We ate the food to elevate our mood and ignore the inner war being fought. We have attacked those who think differently because feeling connected meant that the pain we see in them must be the pain I feel in me. And it hurts. It hurts to want to help and not know how. It hurts to want to run and have nowhere to go. And so we have numbed ourselves through violence, ignorance, food, drugs, sex, and anything we could to not feel the pain. And that has been our act of self-love. It seems insane that we would choose to love ourselves through abuse, but simply turn on the news and notice the patterns. They are clues that if we don't know how to win, then we are born to lose. So we can have empathy for those who feel empty, because when they act out, they are simply acting from love the best they know how. And what you and I can do right now is not allow ourselves to forget that even our worst enemies are choosing it. Everyone is choosing love the best they can with the tools they've got. So they definitely believe in love. It might be me that forgot. Mm. Nice deep inhale. Exhale.
And just dropping into prayer, and what an inspired place to pray from. To the incredible creator of all things, we contribute all of this beauty and abundance that we've been reminded of, Adam and myself, during this incredible conversation. I just want to pray for my dear soul brother, the generosity of his spirit and time, the journey that he's walked, all of the lefts and rights, all of the choices to lead him to a place of insight, depth, connection to you and the divinity that exists in all things, to be able to choose love again and again and again and again. to have given me the courage to make the same choices and for our paths to align in this very moment, to have this conversation at this time is truly incredible. And we contribute that guidance and that courage back to you as we remain humble in our hearts. And I also want to pray for the oceans that connect Adam and I on other sides of the world, with me being in Australia and him being in Nashville, and to remember that although there are thousands of kilometers between us, we're breathing the same air, we're sharing the same present moment. Him, myself, and the other 8 billion incredible human beings on the planet, we pray for those that are not at a point in their journey, a place in their journey where they know how to access you, where they feel they need to defend their positions. We pray that they are guided to a point of transcendence, of suffering, for us to awaken to the awareness that love truly does exist in all moments. It is always abundantly available to us. It's like the sun. It shines on every single one of us. It doesn't discriminate. It doesn't choose the sinners from the saints. It is freely, unconditionally available to all of us when we have the bravery to surrender our expectations, our attachments to outcome, our need to be right, our defenses. We allow ourselves to be exposed. We allow ourselves to be seen. We pray that more humans can step into this powerfully to elevate each other in our vulnerabilities. For all of the listeners that have listened to this podcast, we pray that this message moves through the layers, moves through the ego, lands in the deepest part of their heart and soul into a point of remembrance of all that they are, the limitlessness, which is them, which is all of us, that we can truly build a bridge between the infinite and the finite, to be able to exist as this spiritual being in a human body, to be perfectly imperfect, to give ourselves the permission to unconditionally explore the imperfection, to feel worthy and enough in all that we pursue in life. Amen.
Amen, Ashe, Aho, and I simply add and ask that the transmission that was delivered today here with Nicole and I ripple out into the world through the listeners, through the very frequency of each and every word, every syllable, that it create a ripple of impact, that it warm the hearts of those who receive it, that those warm hearts spread light and love out onto the planet to everyone they come in contact with. And we continue to elevate together, a rising tide lifting all ships, and recognizing that there is no separation between us. Separation is an illusion. And together, as we continue to explore the depths of our own souls, we recognize that we are one and the same. May everyone integrate with ease and grace. May all of it lead to a deep acknowledgement and an understanding as a soul family that we are in this together, and through that connection and through that union, a really sacred union, to come here and play this human game together, that we unlock more of our courage and our strength and our power and our commitment to be the best versions of ourselves. And above all else, may we all have fun and play, and remember the joy, the childlike joy and wonder of being here on this planet together and getting to do this. May that joy and that laughter and those smiles ring out far and wide for eternity. Aho.
Aho.
What a fun podcast. And thank you for creating the space. Thank you to the Love Out Loud community for being people who love out loud. I just... really appreciate it, and I look forward to any and all of you who mingle into my space, whether it's the podcast or my community create or my music or any of it. Like, thank you for being on this journey and being a part of my extended soul family.
All of them I know are going to jump across and support you in all that you do. But you mentioned at the very beginning of this podcast, in a few days, and it will probably already have happened by the time the listeners are listening to this podcast, you are going to release music. And if there are any more supportive human beings in the world than the LOL community, I would be genuinely astounded. And I would love them to get behind what you're doing and support you in that new pursuit. It's so fucking vulnerable to put yourself out there in new ways as an artist. And we've totally got your back. How do we do that?
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you. Yeah. I really appreciate that because poetry is a comfort zone, speaking, podcast, all of that. But making music is an edge for me, and how that's going to be received, and you know, the support or lack of support, like all of that is a part of my human experience, the human me that's like, I hope people like it. And at the end of the day, it's about a very vulnerable thing about this first track is called Voices, and it's about the voices in my head as I literally laid there in bed. The woman that I had been in relationship with, deeply in love with, had lied to me for a second or arguably third time about connecting with someone else. And literally laying there going, one of the lines in the song is, if I forgive you, is that weak or is that devotion? And and like, what is the loving choice? Like we spoke about, like, what is actually love here? And that's what this first song is about. It's called Voices. You can find it on Spotify and all the places under my name. And honestly, what would be the most supportive thing to me is just to share it out, you know, like listen to it, add it to your playlist, like it, so that, and share it with your friends and family or social media, and just help me get the word out, because I'm not going with like a big label and paying that tens of thousands of dollars for promotion and stuff. This is just me saying, I want to reveal this part of myself. And I believe that my art can help and it can heal. And that's what I'm doing.
I just want you to see this. This is the time here as you're making this wish. It's 11:11. And I know that the law community, I trust and I believe that the law community will do exactly that. There's tens of thousands of us all around the world, and I would love to see all of you guys sharing Adam's work, because as we mentioned in the podcast, art has a very profound way of getting under people's egos and into their hearts. And Adam, you know, watching him live, there's absolutely no inch of doubt his power to create that. So please share this message during this time.
Thank you. I really do appreciate that. And I'm excited. You can see in my face, I'm just very excited. This has been something that I've been working on for over a year, and this is the first song that I'll actually be releasing to the world. So thank you for
can't wait. Yeah,
thank you.
Of course. Thank you so much.